All right, everybody, this is the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz, Michael Wiseman back here. We appreciate everybody for listening. It is the end of 2016, and as promised, we are back with a podcast talking about the year in wrestling for 2016. And I will say, you know, this gets thrown around many times, but people always talk about good year, bad year, interesting year, whatever. I found 2016 to be a very intriguing year because of just the way that the wrestling business has started to change.
Yes.
And kind of this crossover between a lot of different companies and whatnot. I think overall it was probably a really good year for wrestling. And especially when it comes to match quality and just the rise of the independents and seeing where the wrestling business has gone overall. I tell you what, I mean, as much as we sit here and we could talk about our likes and dislikes, you can't say there hasn't been a lot of boring moments.
Right, right. Well, and there has been some boring Raws, but there have not been many boring, storylines throughout the business or storylines throughout the company. And you talked about match quality this year has been all over. I mean, it's been fantastic. It's been – we've had some great matches. I was making my list of matches of the year and endless. I could just come up with 10 off the top of my head, you know. Just great, great, great in-ring action this year. And what's funny is you mentioned the indies. The indies this year really did kind of come into their own. And the WWE recognized a lot of these indie organizations in ways they haven't in years past. But – on the other hand, TNA kind of took a step backwards. So just a fascinating year in pro wrestling.
So here's how we're going to do this. Here's the different categories that we have. We're going to do like a damaged angle of the year, comeback of the year, biggest news story, memorable moment, feud of the year, breakout star, tag team, brand of the year or promotion of the year, pay-per-view or event of the year, wrestler of the year, and then the match of the year. And we're also going to break it down in a couple of different ways. One, we will have WWE, and then for some of the categories, we will also have a non-WWE. And I do want to warn everybody, while we watch a lot of wrestling, we do not watch everything.
Sure.
I do not watch a lot of Lucha Underground. I do not watch every Evolve show. I don't watch every PWG show. I'm not going to them, and I'm not getting the DVDs. A lot of times,
you're not.
No,
what the mailing list, Brian? Get on the mailing list.
I know. So I just want to be upfront with everybody about that. Going, how they missed this match? Come on, man! Come on, that's 5-star. So, I don't even know who I was trying to do an impression of there, but
You were doing like the smart mark, who was also kind of a redneck. Like I kind of liked it. It was a good
impression. How dare you exclude this extravaganza that took place? I gave it 5.25 stars.
That's it.
I just want to be upfront with everybody about that. That, you know, you could disagree with us. This is open to interpretation. It's our opinion. And there's going to be some things that get missed that maybe you liked. And that's great that you enjoy those things and you support wrestling wherever it is. So that's fantastic. This is just our list. And typically we are very WWE heavy and it's going to be like that. But there will be some other things that do get mentioned here. So,
and in a couple of cases, we are counting Raw, SmackDown, NXT, as all of those as separate promotions in our own minds for some of these picks. Also, all of my picks come from 205 Live, so, you know, we're good. We're good.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad, you know. They need some love, too.
Feud of the year, the one that's happened.
So let's get into it. Let's start with the damaged angle of the year, a Michael Wiseman specialty right here. So since it is a Michael Wiseman specialty, I will let you start it off.
Oh, man, there are so many options in here because while wrestling has been great, it's not been perfect. And I still think I look back on this year and what set this year off on the wrong tone, I think, was the re-coronation of Roman Reigns. It seemed like WWE did not learn from its mistakes. And so the idea that they brought Roman Reigns back to, again, fight in the main event spot at WrestleMania, to beat Triple H and win the championship, felt all wrong, and he earned all the boos in the house in Dallas. So, unfortunately, Roman Reigns takes my top spot as damaged angle of the year. Sure, I get what they were going for, the feud with Triple H, but it just did not happen, and the fans were not into it in that way. Follow-up to that, damaged angle of the year, is everything happening in TNA wrestling over the last 3 months between Dixie Carter and the whole shebang with the lawsuit, yada, yada, yada.
You know what? I had TNA ownership up there as one of my choices, just because when you look at TNA, that squabble going on behind the scenes and the ongoing money issues that they had this year, it overwhelmed the rest of the promotion. And that was the talk of it. The only other thing that really got talked about, and rightfully so, when it came to TNA in a positive light, was the direction that Matt Hardy took things with his, you know, broken brilliance between him and his brother and the different things that they did. Whether you like it or not, it was something different. It was out of the box and it got talked about. But even that, to some extent, especially in the latter half of the year, really got pushed to the back burner because of all the different things with TNA, and then seeing their dirty laundry get aired in court and the back and forth between the company, especially Dixie Carter and Billy Corgan, and, you know, the ongoing money issues, to where people were, I mean, there was a point where we were sitting there going, okay, are they really going to have Bound for Glory? Are they going to be able to do the TV tapings the week after?
Right.
Now, they will tell
days
you.
Days beforehand. That one was crazy about it. Days beforehand.
I know that people in the company will tell you, like, that was never in question. Yes, there were some different issues and some things that we had to overcome, you know, whatever, but that pay-per-view is always going to take place and, you know, whatever. But at the same time, you've got Billy Corgan going on a national radio program on the Friday before a pay-per-view and talking about, I don't know what they're going to do. We might not have a pay-per-view. We might not have TV tapings. We don't know what's coming up. We don't know if the company is going to continue. We don't know if I'm going to get ownership of this company, which he wanted. So that was just bad, because there's so many different wrestlers that are out there busting their butt and doing their job and doing it to the best of their abilities, considering the circumstances that's hanging over them with TNA going forward. And this was the talk of the company.
Yes.
So it's hard not to put that there. I agree with you when it comes to Roman Reigns. I was trying to think of some other, like, really specific bad angles that have gone on as well. I don't think there's been anything that's been really distasteful or disgusting.
Sure.
Unless you want to put in like the latest one, which, hey, these things happen, unfortunately. And I'm not endorsing it, but on the level of things, it's probably not as high as we want to make it out to be, which is probably saying something in the overall picture. But the ongoing thing between, like, Cody Rhodes and WWE over the passing of his father, you know, that's something as well that's up there. It's not cool. I mean, it's not the dirtiest thing that they've ever done, but at the same time, it doesn't say that it's something that they should do either. And it's obviously upsetting.
There have been some one-off moments here, like the latest feud between Enzo and Enzo and Rusev, and the whole Lana storyline there has been a little bit, I want to say distasteful, but just it doesn't feel right, you know?
That's the one that I was really going to point out, because the whole, hey, I'm going to have an affair with your wife, and come to find out it's just a setup, you know? And I mean, the whole thing is just back-ass backwards. I mean, it's still ongoing, but the love triangle between Cedric Alexander and Noam Dar and Alicia Fox, that's, I don't think that's wowing anybody right now either, but you know, that's a lower end thing. So I would probably go with TNA ownership, and then past that, I would say Enzo.
Yeah.
I'm not as disturbed by the Roman Reigns things as you and some other people, but I totally understand where you're coming from there.
Too much, man. It was just too much.
Too much. Let's talk about the comeback of the year. And you know what? I was thinking about this, and there's a couple guys that fall into this category for me for a couple of different reasons. You could easily say Goldberg, because he's only had the one match, and it was a very quick match, obviously, but the impact that he had was gigantic. And it wasn't even just his in-the-ring comeback. It was his comeback to WWE. It was his comeback with the business that they did with the video game, the buzz that it generated, and then him actually returning to the ring, and then what's to come forward. When it comes to probably a more substantial comeback, and even though it's still kind of early in this, I was looking at Neville as well, because he was a guy that was just kind of floundering in WWE, and we weren't sure where he was going to fit in, and he battled some injuries. And then, you know, the last few weeks, you know, he's turned heel and he's really coming on to where you could see this is going to be a strong character and a guy that's going to be a huge part of the cruiserweight division going forward.
And I think another good point to pull out here is it's not just we're not necessarily just talking about comebacks as far as, oh, he's been out on the shelf and injured, but guys maybe who have had a couple of years where they've not been featured as much, where they've not been as hot, where they've been there but not really there. And this was the year that they came back with a fiery fury.
Right. And because of that, I think we're probably going to be in agreement on who we're going to pick for this.
Okay. I would let you go first, Brian Fritz.
Well, if we're going to go by that, and that was something that I was going to bring up as well, I would say The Miz. Because The Miz has established himself as a top player. He is taking advantage of the TV time he is given, especially following the brand split. As much as I want to complain about the split, that guy has, for the last few years, he has kind of toiled around, and people always thought, will he ever get back to a main event level? Sure. And he did it. He's worked his butt off the entire time, and you see where he's at now. He's had a great feud with Ziggler. He's established himself as a top player on that brand, and it just goes to show that you can recreate yourself. Perseverance pays off. Having his wife there, you know, as a sidekick really, really helped him. And I got to give the guy all the credit in the world.
I came really close to putting The Miz in this top spot because the work he's done since the summer has been fantastic. His Intercontinental title run has been great. And he's had some amazing matches, many of which with Dolph Ziggler, who also deserves a serious rub this year for kind of reestablishing himself in this mix on SmackDown. However, my favorite work that's been done this year by a guy who has really come back and earned a spot to where I could see him being in the main event at WrestleMania has been Chris Jericho. And it's nothing against Chris Jericho's legacy. Chris Jericho has been around. He's done it all in the company, right? But over the last couple of years, partially because of his tour dates with Fozzy, partially because of where they positioned him on the card, he was really nothing more than a ladder to the stars. He was the guy who put over Fandango at WrestleMania. He was the guy who they brought back in to job out to Bray Wyatt. You know, they brought Chris Jericho in to establish younger talent. And while he's still doing a lot of that, what I've loved about his work this year is, number one, he's stuck around past WrestleMania. He's been here all year. That's given him some time to really develop this character, this partnership with Kevin Owens. And I think what we're seeing now with this version, this character of Chris Jericho, is such a great reinvention that, you know, I love The Miz. I think that's a great nod, too. But Chris Jericho is my pick for comeback of the year.
Yeah, I can understand that. And it's kind of weird because you don't think of Chris Jericho as being a comeback kind of guy. But just where he's always been a guy that's been mid to upper card, even, right, you know, during when he comes back just for pockets. You know, between tour dates and, you know, being with the band. But this year he has remained, and it's because he's like what he's done, you know, with this new heel persona and working with Kevin Owens. There's been opportunities for him to go back and to leave, and he's only been like signed through a certain date, and he keeps pushing it back because he likes what he's doing, because it's hot right now. And he knows when you're hot, you got to stick around. I don't think we expect him to stick around past WrestleMania. Like, he'll leave again probably at WrestleMania or shortly thereafter and take another break and go work with the band. But, I see where you're coming from there when it comes to Jericho. It's been amazing to see the many reincarnations of Chris Jericho.
Yes, it has. And he talks about being a character who reinvents himself. I think this year is a great example of it. The whole Bon Jovi persona, the rock star, the elite, the scars, everything. It's so perfect.
I'm still upset that I made a joke about him looking like Bon Jovi and he blocked me on Twitter. And then 2 weeks later, Enzo used my joke.
And tell you what, they listen to our podcast and steal our ideas.
God, I don't think he blocked Enzo.
I don't think he can block Enzo.
Why can't he?
I don't think he's allowed to do that.
Oh, geez. I think Kevin Owens is on the verge of blocking Roman Reigns. Have you seen what's been going on with them?
No, I have not.
Oh, they're having some fun. So somebody got a clip at a house show of Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, wrestling. And Owens has Reigns in a headlock. And while he's got him in the headlock, he is having an argument with a fan, like in the front row. And he's talking about how much merchandise money he's made on t-shirts and whatnot, okay? And he's literally going, I made $27,000 on this, and then my next check was $31,000, you know, and he's like, and to the point where Roman Reigns has to put his hands over his face because he starts laughing in the middle of this match, right?
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Reigns then recognizes it on Twitter because it's becoming a thing and says something along the lines of, I wasn't laughing at the argument. I was laughing at the size of your checks or something like that. And Kevin Owens came back with, I know you didn't come up with that yourself.
That's amazing.
Don't get in a beef with Kevin Owens on Twitter. That's all I want to tell everybody. Do not do that. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. He's a smart dude.
He's extremely smart. Okay. Let's talk about the biggest news story of the year. Ooh. So I wrote down just a smattering of news stories, whether you want to argue they're among the biggest or not. But I would have like 17. Okay.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. But
they're all title changes over the WWE Women's Championship, right?
Yes. But I think I can separate probably the biggest three that stand out to me in any order, probably. But okay. I would say
let me go first here.
Okay.
You got a list, and it's everything's on the list.
Jericho over here, yeah.
Okay. I really tossed this up between a couple of things, but I settled on the brand extension.
Yep,
I think the announcement.
That was my topic too.
I think that'd be the announcement of the brand extension. The way we kind of knew SmackDown was moving back to Tuesday nights, but then they just brought it out. Here we are. We're doing the whole thing. SmackDown Live on Tuesdays. Brand extension is coming back. It changed the face of WWE. What I feel like has been in a positive way, but it completely changed the dynamic of that company. And it's revitalized a show that had become just on TV on Friday nights. SmackDown is now the show to watch if you're a wrestling fan. So the brand extension has been a huge thing. And I think it's been good for business.
I was going to say the brand split, I agree, or the brand extension, whatever you want to call it. That is the biggest story because it did change the landscape of WWE in the way they've done stuff. It's, you know, it's allowed some people to get bigger opportunities. There's been separation between the brands. And I think a residual of this, that's another big story of the year, is the emergence of SmackDown as potentially the lead brand.
Or
at least the more entertaining brand right now. And this past week, they surpassed Raw in the ratings. Now, mind you, remember, Raw is 3 hours, and they went up against Monday Night Football, but nonetheless, and it wasn't a big gap. It was like 30,000 viewers or something, but you know what? SmackDown beat them, and John Cena's bragging about it, and rightfully so, and we'll see if that continues, but you know, SmackDown has been the better show. To me, the other two big things that really stood out this year when it comes to big news stories, the retirement of Daniel Bryan, and the impact that had on the WWE, and just seeing, you know, a guy that was still at the top of the game being forced to retire due to injury, and the heartfelt goodbye that he gave. It was one he didn't want to give for a variety of reasons. He didn't want to wrestle, and one, he didn't even really want to say goodbye, but was told to do so by Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And the other is the rise of independent wrestling.
Mm.
Because we have seen so many groups now with so much talent, have so many great matches, that it's made such an impact where people are following it a lot more now or noticing it now. It really stands out, and you really start to look at, hey, guys can make a career when it comes to just being in independent wrestling, like a real career. They can make real money. They can still have aspirations of going to larger companies, including WWE, but we've seen that you can make a living in independent wrestling. There's a lot of really good shows that are out there. We're following all these different talents and seeing where they might go to next. And it's become a sustainable business to the point where you wonder what's going to happen going forward with, you know, a streaming company like Flow Slam and what other, you know, potential companies like that could pop out of the woodwork. And if WWE is even going to expand because of the rise of independence when it comes to possibly adding some indie groups to stream their events on the WWE network.
It is fascinating. I think that's an underlooked storyline that's been building for the last couple of years. NXT really has paved the way for these indie organizations to get a bigger foothold. But I'm just curious where this goes in 2017, That's the thing I'm most excited about is where does the business go with all these indie organizations, with the expansion of WWE? What's next for professional wrestling? Because it feels, I'm not going to say it's the same thing as the Attitude Era, but the business as a whole feels as on fire and as exciting as it did back in the late 90s.
I'm just going to do a quick rundown of some of my other, you know, bigger news stories, and you tell me what stands out, okay?
Okay.
WWE realizes there is wrestling beyond their universe.
Huh.
Shane McMahon returns, has match at Mania, and remains with the company, but just in a on-TV character role for now. Okay. WWE brings back the Cruiserweights. WWE is expanding overseas, doing a UK championship tournament. Goldberg returns. Brock Lesnar fights in UFC. Women headline a pay-per-view in WWE. The absence of John Cena. Dixie Carter versus Billy Corgan. Roman Reigns wellness suspension. And nothing really happening following that. Now, mind you, we don't know exactly what he got suspended for, but we believe it's Adderall and then not a PED. So I do want to, you know, point that out. More talent open to leaving WWE, including guys like Ryback and Cody Rhodes. The Young Bucks making the decision to not join the WWE. Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura still in NXT. Finn Balor getting called up, but then getting injured during his match at SummerSlam where he won the title. And the other is the rise of, I know I said independent wrestling, but specifically UK wrestling, which has really, really been big this year. And you and the groups that are over there, whether it's, what is it, ICW and Rev Pro and some other groups. Now, you know, ITV is coming back over there. So, I mean, that is really, really coming on quickly.
I think... This maybe should have gone under comeback of the year. I'm sorry we didn't recognize Matt Hardy for what has happened with, but the whole way TNA has built itself around the Matt Hardy brand at this point.
That's a good point.
And the deletion, I think that's fascinating as well. But I want to call out Brock Lesnar fighting in the UFC. Huge, huge potential there because it shows you how, if you're a huge star, if you're a big star like Brock Lesnar, if you're a name, you can go and do these side gigs. Without any kind of repercussion. Of course, we found out later he was on some kind of performance-enhancing drug. All that being said, just interesting. And then the way they brought him back afterwards to lose to Goldberg, fascinating news that transcends professional wrestling.
I don't know why I didn't think about Matt Hardy as the comeback of the year kind of guy, because it's starting to make me wonder if I should have him over at The Miz. Just because of his impact and how different that it was. I mean, he started the year as Money Matt Hardy. And then he comes up with this elaborate storyline and is given the authority to go forward with something that's never been seen in wrestling, something that a lot of people did not like and other people just were extremely intrigued by. And you got to give them all the credit in the world for going forward with it and saying, I'm going in full bore, bore. I think I've told this before in the year, and I don't think there's an issue with me saying the story, but when Matt... Right when Matt was turning into, was it right when he was doing the broken Matt Hardy? I think it was right then. I was supposed to interview him.
Oh, yeah?
And he had said, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm going to be in character. And I'm going to be a heel and I'm going to be a jerk. And he goes, it's up to you if you still want to do it.
Ha!
And he goes, but I'm just going to warn you. He goes, man, I've got this persona and I'm taking it all the way. He goes, social media, you name it. He goes, I'm doing it. And he goes, so if you want to do this, we can. He goes, totally up to you. And I told him, I go, you know what? Let's not do it. I go, I understand where you're coming from. Go for it. We'll do it some other time. And he was like, thank you. Appreciate it.
Wow.
And, you know, he wanted to go all the way with it. He didn't want to just... you know, kind of take some steps forward. And you know, he wanted to do something different where he was a guy that did not break character.
Right.
And even now that he's, you know, still, he doesn't act Jewish, but he's a babyface now, basically. I mean, he's turned it into that because it's become so popular with the broken Matt Hardy character. That dude doesn't break character anywhere.
Yeah.
Once he is on camera, social media, anything like that, that he is broken Matt Hardy. And I'll give him all the credit in the world to do that in today's age of, you know, when social media and interaction and just how open everybody is to the business.
I think these guys, Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho especially, deserve call-outs. While I think The Miz and Dolph Ziggler and a few others have come up and done some great work, they were given that opportunity partially because of the brand extension. I think Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho especially have earned those spots by doing something entirely different, which is what I appreciate about that. And think that's the reason I think they deserve the nod.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I'm going to have to give it to Matt Hardy. Sorry, Miz. Take a back seat again.
You got second place twice.
Most memorable moment.
You want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
You can go.
I was torn. I went back and forth on this a couple of times in my head. I have three.
Oh, but I have seven.
Well, I have a top three. Let me say that. There were more than three memorable moments.
Sure. But
I am going to just gut check it right now. AJ Styles debuting at the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. And I like what happened. The Shane McMahon thing, huge surprise, huge moment. Yeah. And it brings you back to the Attitude Era days of surprises like that. And I even think, you know, the Brock Lesnar Goldberg thing, huge surprise, memorable moment. But AJ Styles, when he debuted at the Rumble, it was one of those catharsis moments for professional wrestling fans. Our guy, a guy we've watched for years and years and years, who we know is the best, is finally going to be on the platform to show it off. And what he's done this year since then has been amazing. But that debut, I got so excited during the Rumble seeing that happen. It is my most memorable moment of 2016 in professional wrestling.
I was at that show. And to look at the stage and to see, like, you heard the music and everybody was just kind of silent, like, what is this? We all kind of had this look of Roman Reigns, whether you're in the building or at home. And, you know, Roman Reigns had this perplexed look of, like, what is this music? And then when you saw the words phenomenal come up, and you could feel the crowd, just the swell of the crowd come up, where it was, you could feel that in the building. And that was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. I have that on my list. I would probably put that at number two. Like, Shane McMahon diving off Hell in a Cell was there. I had Matt Hardy on there just because the overall, like, I guess the first time that we did the final deletion, you know?
Yeah.
One of those, you know, things he did. I had way down the list, probably Dean Ambrose, you know, being the guy that won Money in the Bank and cashing in on the same night.
Yeah.
My most memorable moment, though, is Daniel Bryan retirement speech. Just to watch that play out and see how gut wrenching it was for him and for everybody to go through it with him. To some extent, I mean, you're never going to feel the same as the guy that's actually doing it, especially for somebody that's as passionate about the business as he is and how hard he has worked and the measures he had gone through to hopefully have a comeback and to see it all have to come to an end because of an injury. And the speech that he gave, I mean, that's one of those moments in TV that's like right up there with like the, you know, Ric Flair giving the retirement speech that he did, or his non-retirement speech, shall we say.
I'm retiring from WWE, but not from TNA.
Not from TNA. But those would be the two biggest moments for me. Yeah. But I'd put Daniel Bryan on the top of it.
Okay. Heartbreaking retirement speech. Reminded me a lot of Edge when he retired a few years ago.
Yeah.
Just shocking and takes the wind out of your sails as a professional wrestling fan. And you know it does for these guys as well in their professional lives.
Let's go feud of the year.
You go first.
So I have two feuds that didn't even take place in the ring.
Oh, Billy Corbin,
Billy Corgan versus Dixie Carter and Daniel Bryan versus The Miz.
Ooh. Okay.
However, I know some people would say Charlotte versus Sasha Banks. I think you could entertain the thought of Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. My feud of the year will be DIY versus The Revival.
Huh.
And the reason for that is because of the matches that they put together as well. I know it wasn't the longest feud. I mean, we're talking several months. But remember, the takeover events, there's so much time. There's usually 3 months between them. So I felt like there was enough time to say, and there was enough things that went on between the teams. I felt like I could put that. And their matches were so damn good It's something that maybe I just want to be different, but that's the feud of the year to me.
I think they had a great run in NXT, and I love their matches, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit for sure. But I think when you talk about feuds this year, and I'm going to even exclude AJ Styles versus John Cena, because while I love what they did leading up into SummerSlam, I think we're still in the middle of that, and we got to see what happens in the next chapter. But for me, it's a dead heat between Sasha Banks versus Charlotte and The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. And there were some other great feuds this year that didn't last as long. I think The Shield had potential. It was cut short, right? The three-man match, all of that. But The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler, it touches into something that I love about professional wrestling, just that raw emotional aspect. Dolph Ziggler fighting for his career, fighting for relevance. The Miz being cocky, being arrogant, taking that championship and rubbing it in his opponent's faces, saying, look what I've accomplished. You may not like me, but look what I've accomplished. And then letting them settle that in the ring, it just leads to some great catharsis. When Ziggler won that match, when his career was in the line, it was a fun moment and a fun culminating part of that feud. Now The Miz went on to win it. And I think Charlotte versus Sasha Banks, a lot of the same kind of mentality. When feuds feel that personal, and when they feel that even matched, that evenly matched, it makes for some great wrestling television, some great professional wrestling moments. And that's what pro wrestling is built upon, is that element of just personal. We don't like each other on this base level. I think it's just great. So those two are tied for me as far as feud of the year goes.
Quite honestly, if we really want to go with the non in ring action, Billy Corgan versus Dixie Carter is probably feud of the year.
Why? Yeah.
Which is just insanity.
It could only get better if they brought back Billy Corgan to come wrestle at a TNA pay-per-view against Dixie Carter next year.
Let's do it, man.
It would do huge business.
Jeff Jarrett will be the special referee. Come on, Slapnuts. Come on.
It'll be a King of the Mountain match.
Oh, God, those matches. I hated those damn King of the Mountain matches. Man, they're so dumb. I mean, the only thing that was worse to me was the reverse battle royal, which is one of the all-time dumbest matches ever.
Yes. Yeah,
the reverse battle royal. Watching guys taking bumps so they would not go into the ring. Okay. Oh, God, it was insanity. Breakout star of the year. Okay, so in this one, I have both WWE and non-WWE.
Okay.
But I'll let you start.
Okay. I focused mostly on WWE this year. And I'm focused mostly on younger guys, right? So we could say AJ Styles had a breakout year in WWE, but he's an established talent. I'm talking about guys who really did not come into this year with you expecting much of them. So, I mean, it'd be very easy to put James Ellsworth at the top of this list.
I have him on my list.
And I think he's done some amazing work with a limited role. But I don't think he's going to be around that long, much beyond 2017. I think he's a flash in the pan.
Doesn't matter, so, man. We're talking about 2016.
Oh, that's true. So my list, as it stands, is James Ellsworth, Baron Corbin, and Braun Strowman. And while I think we had some really great, you can talk about Nakamura coming over into NXT. You can talk about the guys in the Cruiserweight Classic. I'm focusing mostly on WWE here, and I think that Baron Corbin, especially in the latter half of this year, and especially down the stretch in 2016 with chairs match, is what it is. But he's had some pretty fun moments. The triple threat match the other night on SmackDown. Baron Corbin is setting himself up for a pretty good heel run, maybe in 2017, maybe in 2018, as a champion. So his in-ring work is improving. His mic work is improving. And I think Baron Corbin really did cement some stuff down the road. Now, Braun Strowman, I think he's still a wild factor. I think he's had some great moments with what he's done with demolishing members of the Shield, etc. But I give the nod to Baron Corbin this year.
I agree with both those guys being on the list. Here's my choice when it comes to WWE, though. Breakout star, Alexa Bliss.
I didn't even consider that.
Because she was somebody that I think a lot of us didn't expect to get called up. And even when she did, people are like, we'll see what happens there. But even before she got called up, when she broke away from Blake and Murphy, you could really see her start to come into her own. She had more opportunities to wrestle, obviously, because she was just a manager for the group. She's wrestling more. She was getting better. You could see her character even improving a lot more being on her own. She deserved the call up. And since she's been called up, she has taken full advantage of the opportunity that she's given there. I think she's a great character. I think she's better in the ring than people give her credit for, and she continues to improve. So to me, I mean, and she was somebody that really wasn't even on the radar before 2016, other right. than being a manager in NXT. So that she really stood out to me. So I had to give it to her.
Okay, I changed my mind. I like yours better.
It's always funny that you write down your list and you forget a person or two or a match or something. When it comes to non-WWE, there was a couple of guys that stood out. I had Will Ospreay on here, somebody that really kind of hit the scene. To me, the breakout star, even though he was a star but became an even bigger star than ever before, is Kenny Omega. You're talking about the first American to win the G1 over in New Japan, and then coming up here, you know, for Wrestle Kingdom 11, he's going to be challenging Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And yes, he was the Super Junior Champions over there before, but Kenny Omega having to take the mantle of being a top guy following, you know, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows and AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura all defecting from New Japan last year. I mean, he got the opportunity to step up. And it was a big opportunity, and it was big shoes to fill, and he's done it.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he has an opportunity to become one of, if not the biggest American stars in New Japan history.
That would be huge.
Now, mind you, I mean, that's saying a lot, and I'm probably overstating it, because you're also talking about guys like Hulk Hogan and Stan Hansen, and Stan Hansen was more All Japan. But, I mean, you've got some other guys that have had huge imprints in Japan. And but Kenny Omega, you know, in today's current climate, I mean, he can have a bigger imprint than AJ Styles, because he's probably going to end up being there longer overall. I mean, I think he already has been there longer, but just to see what he has done so far and saying, I'm not just a super junior, I'm a heavyweight. Right. I belong right. in the mix with these guys. He's been incredible. Tag team of the year.
I'm going to go first.
Please do.
In a close contest, as close as they come, I gave the nod to the New Day over the Arrival.
I was hoping you were going to do the,
don't you dare be sour. I love the Arrival. I love the work they've done in NXT. I think they are as old school as it gets, and it's perfect for today's wrestling climate. However, the emergence of the New Day this year, late last year into this year, the way they sold merchandise, the way they stole the show, they got extended segments on Raw. It really reset the pace for the tag team division on both Raw and later SmackDown. So the New Day, and taking a gimmick, we talked about this, taking a gimmick that was washed up, was worthless, and turning it into this little bit of magic that taps into the pop culture scene, the youth movement. I loved it. So the New Day, three great talents, but they come together and made an even better team. That's just been something unique, something fun, and really something refreshing in the scene of professional wrestling. But I give a close second place to the Arrival.
I agree with both of those. And New Day breaking the record, and I know that's a booking decision. And some people can argue that they shouldn't have gotten that because it had to be drawn out a little bit. I still have to give it to New Day for what they've done. And like you said, kind of, you know, putting tag team wrestling a little bit more on the forefront than where it was before. Now, here's the question I have, though, okay?
Okay.
If we mix in non-WWE, and that includes NXT, but non-WWE tag teams, would it still be the New Day? Because now you have to incorporate two teams in my mind, and that's Matt and Jeff Hardy.
Okay.
And the Young Bucks.
I think Matt and Jeff Hardy, while they've done good work, I don't think would make them tag team of the year. I think individually Matt Hardy deserved what we talked about earlier, but I would not put them above the New Day. The Young Bucks, I would put them above the Revival, but again, the New Day is on a bigger stage, and they've done something a little bit more worthwhile throughout the course of the year, from just selling merchandise, from the stage, the scene they've gotten, and taking what was a dead division and revitalizing it. So,
but on that same thing, you could say, well, look at what the Young Bucks have done. If you when you talk about the stage that they are on with what they've had to work with, because these are guys that it wasn't too long ago where they were really wondering, like, what is our future in wrestling? They had a bad run in TNA where the booking was horrendous. And they just said, hey, we're going to find a way to make this work. And they have been outrageous. They have been incredibly entertaining. Their matches are awesome. Just about every time they go out there, they have re-energized the way that you can be successful in the independent market. And they're a big part why I think the indies are back up. Indies are cool again. The merchandise that they have sold. And, you know, they signed a really good deal last year with Ring of Honor and New Japan. And now they've signed a new deal with both those companies for 2 years for even more money. And just the way that they're able to brand themselves, the merchandise that they come up with and everything. And I know that a lot of that is out of the ring stuff, but even their in-ring stuff has been, you know, spectacular. So I'm going to give it to the Young Bucks.
Oh, well, good for you. I'm sticking with my pick.
But the New Day right behind them. And it's too bad that we're not going to get that feud. However, did you see we're on Sports Illustrated where Matt Hardy, the Young Bucks did say we are going to the compound to face Matt and Jeff Hardy this year?
No, I did not see that.
Yes,
that's amazing. That's fantastic.
I want to see how that's going to work.
Yep.
Brand of the year. Now we're going to say brand of the year because, you can call it a company as well, but I think we want to do it this way because of what WWE did business wise.
Yeah. And I think it's fair. Yeah. I think it's fair to include some of the side companies in your choices. Mm-hmm. But brand of the year makes most sense because WWE really is treating all three of these as separate entities on their own under
right.
their own
umbrella. And they, I mean, the brand split was what, in July? Something.
Yeah.
So for half of the year they've had a brand split.
Yeah. So you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll let you go first.
SmackDown, baby.
Mm-hmm.
SmackDown has done it's they deserve that company, that brand deserves comeback of the year. Because SmackDown went from complete irrelevance to being the premier show in WWE and perhaps on all of wrestling television. SmackDown has had great matches. They've booked great shows. They've delivered some great pay-per-views as a result. The feuds we talked about between Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, Dolph Ziggler, Daniel Bryan, Dean Ambrose carrying that belt, feuding with AJ Styles. All of these things have been very memorable for the last half of this year. And it's just a lot because of the way SmackDown has repositioned itself as the wrestler show. And so I really enjoy watching SmackDown more than Raw now. You can't force something like this. SmackDown, there's had to be a little bit of creative ingenuity behind this. They've taken a lot of stuff from NXT that worked down there and brought it onto the main stage in WWE. So SmackDown has just been a real pleasant treat this year, even up to last week, last show of the year, probably maybe their best show of the year. So kudos to them, and I'm glad they're beating Raw in the ratings. Screw Raw.
I would say SmackDown as well. When it comes to NXT, NXT has had a good year, but
yeah,
the latter half of the year, they've been missing the talent. And it's just because they're a little bit more depleted and they're waiting to kind of restock right now. And they're kind of in this limbo area right now. Plus, especially when it comes to the lack of depth in the women really stands out there, considering that's been such a big part of that show. And they're trying to work up, you know, some new contenders right now between Ember Moon and Billie Kay and Liv Morgan. And they're in the process of working them up right now. So I would say SmackDown, if I was counting outside of WWE land, it's hard not to give it to New Japan again, just because of the overall,
true.
You know, work. Because so many people thought this is going to be a down year with all those guys leaving, and their business has been up. And that means Okada has become a massive star. And, you know, I talked about what Kenny Omega has done and just overall what they've been able to do as a company.
But let me ask you this, Brian. Let me ask you
sure.
this. If SmackDown was not under the WWE umbrella, if SmackDown was a separate company, let's say SmackDown was TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Take the same talent that SmackDown has right now, but they were a separate company. If TNA had got AJ Styles, The Miz, Dean Ambrose, all of these guys together like this and booked the shows in this way, could even make any argument that SmackDown has been as good as New Japan over the last few months?
It depends on what your likes are. I mean, if you're more into heavy wrestling shows, then I think you go New Japan. If you want a little bit more of a mix of storyline and matches, because I mean, yeah. New Japan has storylines, but it's more based on in-ring action.
Sure, sure.
So I think it just comes down to what you like.
Mm. Okay. Fair enough.
Pay-per-view or show of the year?
Okay.
This is kind of a tough one.
I'll let the door open. If you want to call out a specific episode of Raw, that's up to you.
Oh, look at you, man. Oh, you're changing the rules on the fly here.
No.
I see how it is.
Pay-per-view of the year. What'd you pick?
I'm going to let you
know. You have
first.
A list of 15. I know you have a list of 15 over there in your back pocket. Okay.
I do not. How many is my list here? It is. I got 5 shows listed here.
Okay. This was tough. And I think both, even up till last month, TLC was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2 from Ooh, top to bottom.
How about that Brooklyn 2?
We can call out Ontario for being great. We can call out Dallas for being great. We can call out some of the other big shows that WWE did this year, including the Rumble, as being very entertaining. But Brooklyn 2 was just a little bit of magic from top to bottom. The debut of Bobby Roode, in not the debut as far as character, but in ring, his entrance, the match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe was great. The DIY versus Arrival match part one, mm-hmm. that was amazing. So many great things from that show. And I remember that the next day we went to see SummerSlam, and the contrast between those two shows was incredible. Just how good on TakeOver 2 Brooklyn 2 was compared to how meh SummerSlam was. So
Brooklyn, we thought it was going to be the other way around too.
Right. SummerSlam had all the big guns coming out this year. So NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2 show of the year.
It's funny you say that, because my show of the year was NXT Dallas.
Mm. Mm.
Because you had American Alpha against The Revival, which was a fantastic match. Austin Aries against Baron Corbin, which was really good. Nakamura versus Zayn, which was ridiculously good.
Yeah.
Asuka versus Bayley, which was extremely good. And then Balor versus Joe. This nice, concise 5-match shows. And there wasn't a bad match on the show.
Sure.
It was not a bad match. And I know people, Baron Corbin, Austin Aries. No, they still had a good match, okay?
Yeah.
But I mean, compared to the others, yeah, it wasn't as good as them. But I mean, that show from top to bottom was ridiculous. And it was the NXT debut of Nakamura, which was nuts, to say the least.
Yeah.
I had that show there. Brooklyn 2 was really good. Wrestle Kingdom 10 was really good.
Mm.
But that's non-WWE, obviously. I don't think it was good as the previous year, but it was still a really good show. But I had NXT TakeOver Dallas at the top of the list.
I think you can call out stuff from the Cruiserweight Classic. Had some great moments.
Absolutely. And you know, Money in the Bank was like a really good show.
Yep. But if you were to take one show this year that, I mean, I immediately came home and rewatched it. It's just one of those shows. Brooklyn 2, Dallas was great too. Brooklyn 2 was just special for me.
Okay. Wrestler of the year.
Ooh.
To me, everybody knows probably where I stand on this, and it's a pretty damn easy pick. For me, it is AJ Styles. You're talking about a guy who wrestled in New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom. And in the same year, he was at WrestleMania, and shortly thereafter, and he was a top guy in New Japan, and he became a top guy in WWE, to where he is continuing to be the world champion on SmackDown. The guy has great work with everybody, and he is at the top of his game, which is so ridiculously high. To me, it's not even close. It's AJ Styles.
Could not agree more. This guy came in and we were all worried, is it going to be one of those WWE outsiders who walks in and then is kind of shown the mid card, or how is this going to be treated? But at 39 years old, He has had a career year. We talk about John Cena last year having a great year. AJ Styles had a better year this year. I love to compare these two guys because they're the same age. They're just taking very different paths. AJ Styles has done it all in 1 year in WWE on top of everything he's already accomplished historically. But does he have a bad match in him? You can pair him with almost anybody. He can have an entertaining match with James Ellsworth. Okay. His mic work has improved dramatically. He's really just owned the moment. So I love him to death. I'm glad WWE has given him this platform. I'm glad he's on SmackDown. AJ Styles, hands down, superstar of the year.
Now, keeping it in the WWE realm, who do you have second?
I don't know that I came up with a second.
I have a second.
Let me just wrestler of the year, AJ Styles, hands down. You're going to put, let me see here. Kevin Owens.
Wrong.
Oh, okay.
Number two, Charlotte.
Oh, of course. No. I disagree with that. Sasha Banks.
I like Charlotte's year better.
I like Sasha Banks there better.
Well, that's up to you, and you could be wrong. I just thought, well, you know, take out the title reigns and whatnot, just what she has meant for that division. Sure. She's obviously been put in a little bit of a stronger position. And remember, she was the one when they changed that title from Divas Championship to the Women's Championship at WrestleMania. She was the one that won that night, and she continues to evolve. I mean, they figured out that she shouldn't be a fan favorite. Let her be a heel. She's not a perfect heel, and there are definitely some things I think she continues to improve. But in the ring, she's extremely good. She's a hell of an athlete. I think she continues to be a better character. And to me, she's been the standout of that division as they continue to have more and more of a presence of women in the WWE. But everybody thought it was going to be Sasha Banks, and she's been really good. But to me, it's been Charlotte that has stood head and shoulders above everybody.
I think it's interesting you bring up the women's division here because I would love to commend Charlotte, commend Sasha Banks, and commend Becky. Becky gets so overlooked by not being on Raw.
Oh, I know.
But she is, I think she is every bit as good as those other two women. And she has done really great work on SmackDown. She is she has a fire and a passion about her in that ring that can't be matched. So I don't think she's wrestler of the year, but I think Becky definitely would be at least in my top 10 wrestlers of the year.
Sure.
Along with the other two other women there.
I think when you look at non-WWE, you got to look at Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. They really stand out to me over in New Japan. Tetsuya Naito as well, who has really come on, as well. And he's probably somebody that I'm sure there's some people there sitting there pulling their hair out that I haven't mentioned him yet. Will Ospreay and Ricochet have had incredible years as well. Yes. So those are big. Kenny Omega to me, probably wrestler of the year outside of WWE. Match of the year. So I have, if you count both WWE and non-WWE, I have 10 matches here.
Yeah, I did. I have 5 matches. I have 7 matches.
Are any of them non-WWE / NXT?
Some of them are NXT.
Okay.
I mixed in NXT here, but I'm happy to give you my WWE match of the year as well.
Okay, so you separated WWE and NXT.
I have them listed in an order, but I can also skip around and give you the ones that aren't.
Okay.
Let me just kick it off. My match of the year was an NXT match.
Oh, I already know what it is then.
Is it the same as yours?
I'm going to say that your match of the year for NXT is TakeOver Toronto DIY versus The Revival 2 out of 3 Falls.
Amazing. Amazing match.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible match. It is the greatest thing I've seen since sliced bread. That match.
You're taking on the Iron Sheik here, but greatest thing all my life.
Just tag team wrestling can be so fantastic when it's done right. And The Arrival and DIY had such great chemistry. And for this to be the part two of what they started in Brooklyn, it just made it so special. Love the match. Love the guys involved. Love the moment that DIY got to have. and hands down match of the year. But that being said, my second favorite match of the year, AJ Styles versus John Cena at SummerSlam.
Absolutely, man. We're on the same page here.
I loved it. It was a great moment for both guys. John Cena is still good in the ring. He's still really good in the ring. AJ Styles brought it. He earned the moment and the victory that night. And it was the best match at SummerSlam. And I think it was the best big match of the year for WWE. They had a lot of title matches. They had a lot of really hyped main events throughout their 16 pay-per-views. AJ Styles versus John Cena had a big match feel, and it delivered in a big way.
And I would say the other match that really stood out when you talk to WWE NXT to me, and you could probably put these three matches we're mentioning in any order, Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura.
Okay.
Well, okay. Was way, way up there just because the presence of Nakamura, seeing Sami Zayn being given that opportunity, and we already knew how exceptionally good he is, but seeing the instant chemistry, people are wondering like, oh, is Nakamura going to be changing his style coming over from New Japan to WWE? And yes, there are tweaks, but that first night and the impression that he gave, like, hey, I am here. Okay. And I am still Nakamura that you've seen, was awesome. And just to see the instant chemistry between those guys and the match that they had, that was incredible.
Let me give you my top seven, then we can write on your list. My top seven in order. Match of the year, Arrival versus DIY, NXT TakeOver Ontario. Number two, AJ Styles versus John Cena at SummerSlam. Number three, Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens at Battleground.
Okay.
Number four, Sasha Banks versus Charlotte at Raw, Falls Count Anywhere.
Yep, November 28th, yep.
Yep. Number five, Sami Zayn versus Nakamura, NXT Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler at No Mercy.
Okay.
And number seven, the Survivor Series 5-on-5 Raw versus SmackDown match.
And I think other matches that I would put in there, I had the Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, no DQ match on Raw from November 21st.
Mm, yep.
I had the No Mercy match, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, John Cena, triple threat for the WWE Championship.
Yep, that was a great match, too.
That was a great one. You know what? If you really want, I don't think it's match of the year, but, you know, it was a really, really good match. It was the match from this past week's SmackDown.
Yeah. You know, between the main event?
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin, AJ Styles. It was good.
Yeah. So now I will mix in some non-WWE stuff now. One of the most divisive matches of the year, Will Ospreay versus Ricochet, New Japan Best of the Super Juniors, which was mind-blowing to see what they were able to do. I mean, it was like watching The Matrix.
But it just felt, it was a great match and hugely entertaining, but it just was not quite my style of professional wrestling.
I think you can go back to Wrestle Kingdom 10 last year, both the AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura match and the Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kazuchika Okada matches were incredible.
Yeah.
Just the way that show built to a crescendo as well. And those being the final two matches were awesome. And the other match that really stood out this year, and we're very lucky that we did not have a death following this one, Ring of Honor All-Star Extravaganza 8, Ladder War 6.
Yeah.
Young Bucks, Motor City Machine Guns, and The Addiction. Yeah. Christopher Daniels, be safe, my friend.
Dear God. Dear God.
That guy, man, he's in his mid-40s, is like, watch this. Watch what I am going to do. And mind you, the storyline of the match was, we are the tag team champions, and I'm going to hold on to this dear life. I know the end of my career is coming, but damn if I'm going to let you take this title from me. And this impassioned promo he did, which is arguably the best promo he's ever done in his life, which is saying something, considering he's been in the business for over 20 years, and to watch him put himself through the amount of punishment that he did in that match was ridiculous. And just to see those three tag teams work as well as they did was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That was rather incredible. So before we get out of here, we are going to do a separate podcast early next week, and we are going to give our predictions for 2017.
I got a little extra time to do my homework. Thank God.
Exactly. I will let you give one prediction right now. Give me one red, hot, scorching take for 2017.
The cruiserweights are moved off of Raw.
Okay.
I don't know if that's very scorching, but it's the first thing that comes to mind.
I think it's
there's
got to
be a shakeup there. Lukewarm. Okay, I'll take it. I like it.
Can I give you one that I don't think is really as hot? When I said earlier in the week, I was really thinking, okay, this is a hot take. But it's when you really look at it in perspective, it's probably not as hot, and it could probably irritate some people and excite others. The Miz will be a world champion in 2017.
Okay. I think that is a hot take, but I don't think it's super hot. It's not as hot as
I want it to be, man.
It's not boiling hot. It's because the Miz has earned that spot, dude.
I want that to be hot, you know? And
you know what a hot take would be?
Mm.
That was Braun Strowman as a world champion in 2017. Ooh.
Now, I know we're going to be doing this podcast next week, but for all you cheaters out there, you can go over to Sporting News or check me out on Twitter at Brian Fritz and read my red hot predictions for 2017 in WWE, which I wrote like a paragraph or two about a bunch of predictions, and then I did some quick hitters. I think I did 20 predictions, which is just ludicrous. Okay.
Crazy.
I you know what? Read those and I'll share them next week. I'm going to save it. But everybody can read that. And there was one of them I changed. It was going to be a monstrously hot take. Okay, I'll share this one with you real quick before we get out of here, okay? So I had this originally written. Samoa Joe debuts in WWE. Shinsuke Nakamura remains in NXT.
The whole year?
For the whole year.
What?
I swear to God, I had it written. And then, you know, I go, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And I changed to say Nakamura will come up, but he has to wait longer. And he's probably not going to come up maybe after Raw, but probably likely over the summer, like around SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And you know what? We don't know what they're going to do yet. Like, are they going to change? Are they going to do another draft? Will they do a thing where, okay, now you can sign guys from NXT, or we're going to do a thing where let's make some trades. Are they going to do an event like that? But I hope that is true. At the same time, and I know this might be sad or ludicrous, whatever you want to say, I am not going to be shocked if Nakamura does not join the main roster in 2017.
Nope. And I'm going to tell you part of the reason for that. Triple H has said it. They're trying to build up NXT as a third brand that is equal to the first
two. They need star quality right now. And he is their top draw. He's their top star. And that's why I was going to keep it there. And I go, you know what? That's a scorcher. That's a scorcher, and I really don't want to believe it. So I said, I chickened out. I chickened out. But for all the right reasons. For all the right reasons on that one. Uh-huh. So, you can go to Sporting News. Like I said, follow me on Twitter, at Brian Fritz. I tweeted out a link to the story, because good luck trying to find it on Sporting News otherwise. you can actually go to the menu bar and go to All Sports and click on WWE, and it's right there.
Turn left at Albuquerque and stop where there's some dirt on the side of the road.
So it's all there. So thanks again to everybody for listening to the podcast. Whether you agree or disagree with our choices, let us know. Feel free to share.
Yeah.
We're going to have the link on Facebook as well. And you can write responses on iTunes to what you feel about the matches. And please do that when you rate and review us there. You can email us. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at Between the Ropes. I'm at Brian Fritz. Michael is at The Real Wiseman. So tell us what you think about our list. And then, like I said, we will do an extra podcast next week, and we will give our predictions for 2017. And, you can interact with us as well on those too. So I think it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to doing it with you here in Between the Ropes.
There you go. So everybody subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also get us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and the TuneIn app. You can check us out at BetweenTheRopes.com as well. And of course, follow us on all those different places on Twitter, and check us out on Facebook as well. So thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week right here, Between the Ropes.